This is Remnant Bride Radio, bringing to you Time with Gary, a common man with an uncommon understanding. Now, from RemnantBrideRadio.com, here's Gary Naylor.
Hi, this is Gary Naylor. Let's spend some time together.
The purpose of our time together in this broadcast is to address the recent information available on the Remnant Bride weblog posted on April 12th. It's titled Passover 2009. In it, we examine the hopeful significance and even the fulfillment in what is called the covenant with the many. This is an extremely important truth. It's something that people do not talk about outside of the bride. And how many items is that true concerning bride truth? Well, we're going to talk about this, but before we get into it, let's introduce Chris Meyer, the co-host of the program. Chris, it's always good to have you.
Hi, Gary. It's good to always be with you again.
Chris, I know you would agree one of the unique things about the bride is its knowledge. We have seen things that no man has ever seen before, and these are hopeful for these days. Would you agree?
Well, I would, Gary, and we were just briefly talking about that. I mean, where else can you see the covenant of the many, the seven-year covenant of the many? Where else can you see just the teaching on the Elijah, the true teaching on the Elijah work? You won't get this anywhere else but Remnant Bride.
No, and the list continues on and on. The Nazarite vow, the two-part remnant, the Bible contradictions, and it goes on and on and on and on. And those things give me hope and encouragement in this day. We've spoken before concerning the uniqueness of the bride in that we have two tools, government and intercession. Let's talk about something else right now, Chris.
Okay.
We're going to talk about knowledge. I was thinking about knowledge just the other day and how the world has abused knowledge. They have this knowledge for technical skills, for example, the internet and such, television, radio, and how they have used knowledge for corrupt and evil purposes in tearing down the moral fabric of our nation. So the knowledge that they have been entrusted with, they have abused. The bride is unique in that we have a knowledge that we hope is going to take us to where we need to be in the fulfillment of the Elijah work. Now, one of the things I was thinking about, Chris, is that how important knowledge is. Now, whenever Yeshua was walking this earth, he knew what his purpose was. He knew where he was from. He knew he came to die. He said it beforehand. He knew the timing of it. When he had the Passover meal, he knew what was going to take place and went out into the garden and prayed. He told Judas what to do. He told Pilate what was going to happen, that he really didn't have any authority other than what had been given to him. When he ascended alive, came back from the grave, he told the apostles to go and wait, and depending on which gospel you read as to where he told them to wait, but they were waiting for Pentecost. He knew Pentecost was coming. He knew he would die on Passover. He knew all of these things. He knew the fixed time of Yahweh. Chris, I believe it's very important that Yahweh reestablish that kind of understanding, that kind of knowledge on this earth in this time. Now, it gives me hope that we are walking it out and gaining understanding and knowledge as mere men, which will give us fulfillment. That is my hope as we approach Passover, that Yahweh is giving us knowledge. You know, one of the criticisms that people have made of me is they say, the gospel is simple, the simple gospel. Well, Yeshua did not have just the simple gospel in his mind. He knew the workings of Yahweh and what had to transpire. In fact, you know, if anybody had a simple gospel in their mind, it was the apostles and Peter, who rebuked him for saying that he was going to go to the cross. They wanted this simple Messiah to come and deliver them, as Jews continue to wait on to this day. There is probably not much difference between simple gospel and naivety. In fact, I think they're the same. Simple gospel and naivety is the same thing. Yeshua did not possess naivety. He knew what was going to take place. I hope that is the case with us in the bride right now. As we walk out these things and have learned them, which is what we're going to talk about, what has transpired in the last 6 months. Do you have any comments about that?
Well, yeah, I do. And I think when people infer to you that you've taken this and made it complicated, I think the very opposite has happened. It wasn't until I understood Remnant Bride Truth that the gospel became very, very simple to me to understand. So the fact that they don't have the Remnant Bride Truth, really, they're deceived in a way, because you've made it complicated, but to them, because they think it should be simple, and it is, but you need the eyes to see. And so I would say that I clearly see things simpler than I ever have once I understood Remnant Bride Truth.
Well, give us an example of that.
Well, the two-part remnant, the breach of Christianity.
That is simple, isn't it?
Yes, it is. And once I understood the breach and saw first remnant, breach, second remnant, when I read Scripture, I was able to see things in light of that, and it became very simple and clear.
Yes, I agree. For me, Remnant Bride Truth is obvious as the nose on your face. Whenever I saw the reality of the two-part remnant separated by the breach of Christianity back in 1994, my response then was, how come nobody has ever figured this out? This is so obvious. And whenever you see the covenant that goes back to Genesis 15 with Abraham, and when you see how Abraham laid out the covenant parts, the repetition of it is replete through the Scriptures. That's where it comes back to what you just said, the simplicity. He repeats that pattern over and over and over, right?
And he's consistent, Gary. He's always consistent in his word. You've talked for months now about the seamless garment of truth that the word presents. It is seamless. It is unripped, untorn. It fits. It flows. It weaves in and out of itself. And again, it's just so simple to understand. And maybe these folks that say, you know, Gary, you've made it too complicated, to them, what you've written is complicated because they don't have eyes to see.
Yes.
They don't understand. They don't have the simple knowledge of the Word because they're not seeing it in the light of Remnant Bright Truth.
I call it a kindergarten position. Just looking at Jesus loves me, this I know. And I'm not trying to be harsh or mean, but that is what most people are accustomed to. Here's one of the things I was thinking about right before the program. There is a difference between followers and leaders. Followers can have simple understandings. That's fine for them. Leaders, a leader had better not have a simple understanding. A leader had better understand the ins and outs of everything and anticipating where the whole is going. And so leaders do not have that, quote, privilege of just a simple understanding. They better know the nuts and bolts of it. And that's what we're going to talk about in this broadcast.
Well, I like this subject of, and I know we'll get into the covenant of the many in this writing on Passover, but, you know, knowledge in and of itself, one would say that, you know, is knowledge enough to bring forth Emmanuel, to bring forth the return of Yeshua. And obviously it's not. It's going to take a move of the Spirit. But the knowledge that we have has brought us as close or closer to understanding what it's going to take to bring him back. The Elijah has to come first. And without the knowledge of Remnant Bright Truth, we'd be years away from even remotely having a shot at being part of bringing forth the return of Yeshua.
Okay, let's look at an example of what you just said. What if Yeshua had left this earth and didn't instruct his disciples in anything? Would they have been together on Pentecost? Maybe so, maybe not. He made sure and gave them specific instructions. It was important that they be at a certain place at a certain time. He told them to tarry. In Luke, he said, don't leave Jerusalem. Knowing where one is supposed to be at the right time is important, whether Yahweh leads us or he guides us.
And right, you use the word knowing, which is a form of the word knowledge, correct?
That's right. And the scripture says, you will know the truth, and the truth will set you free.
Mm-hmm.
And so that is what we are pursuing. In the same way that Yeshua did, we are pursuing to know something before it ever takes place. And I think it's important. I think it's important that we pursue Yahweh, that we press Yahweh, that we unction him to do something. But, of course, it's all his leading us anyway. Let's rehearse what has taken place over the last 6 months. Okay?
All right.
In October, even in September, we began to take hope in trumpets and atonement, that we would see a fulfillment in 2008 that we had walked out in 2005 at the first ever, well, that was, that was the first ever trumpets meeting.
It was. That's right.
That's right. And then we held a Tabernacles Pentecost in 2005 as well for the first time. And then we had a Tabernacles Pentecost based on the new millennial calendar that took place in the early part of 2008 in January that was actually tied to the previous year. Now, that may not make any sense to anybody. It's accurate, but here's my point. When we came up October 16, we were hoping for a fulfillment that we had walked out previously. It was tied to things like Nehemiah rebuilding the walls of Jerusalem. And 50 Jubilee waiting periods later, 50 times 49, brought us to 2008, which would be a Jubilee of Jubilees, if you would, which would be likened to that whenever the sons of Israel came up to the Promised Land the first time, it too was 50 Jubilee waiting periods from Adam. So we saw that 2008 was a great opportunity to have the fulfillment. We looked for the fulfillment of the signet ring. We looked for the ministry of the covenant with the many starting. And nothing happened in that regard other than on October 16, which was trumpets, 2008. I had an identification with Satan. I became like him, unfortunately. And then at Tabernacles, I had an experience, of course, of Satan being locked out. And people can go to the weblog and read those articles. Nothing happened at Trumpets and Tabernacles. It was very discouraging to us. And we looked to Yahweh, and we saw, well, okay, we'll walk out all the way to Tabernacles Pentecost, which was 49 days later. One lady had asked me, where is the signet ring transferred? Is there any testimony in the scripture? Well, yes, there is. There is the testimony of Mordecai and Haman, where Haman was exposed, and he was hung on a gallows of 50 cubits tall, which is a Pentecost, and the signet ring went to Mordecai. So we saw the signet ring identified with a Pentecost. And so we were hoping for a Tabernacles Pentecost fulfillment that one would be on December 26, 2008. That was after 49 days from the Great Eighth Day. The Great Eighth Day was November 6th. I'm giving this information just to document it. So it's recorded here and people can write it down if they wish. The Great Eighth Day was November 6th. The first Tabernacles Pentecost, December 26th. When nothing happened, we were discouraged. I began to think about driving a truck. Then I recalled, or I gave attention to, the article that a lady had sent me concerning the count to Pentecost being 249s. So we launched on another wait of 49 days to a second attempt at a Tabernacles Pentecost. That was February 13, 2009. We hope that this was the fulfillment. February 13, 2009 came and nothing. I was really ready to go drive a truck then. But then I considered, well, you know, March is a very significant month, and I'm just going to wait through. And then Yahweh then showed us two witnesses, as you asked, of a three-part wait. And those were from the Elijah, the three times that the captain of 50 with his 50 went to get him. He was successful on the third. And then we saw at Sinai the same testimony of 349s. So we came to April 3. That was going to be Tabernacles Pentecost. And I had said, as you will recall, Chris, this is our best shot right here.
Well, it was. And as you continue to tell the story, it really gets exciting about what we're about to embark on.
Yeah, we've been on a journey. I wrote in the recent article that I referred to at the beginning of the broadcast that, you know, we get a ticket and it takes us to the next destination. One gentleman who was proofreading, and he says, this must be a roller coaster ticket. Okay, so that brings us to April 3, 2009. Nothing happened, and I was certainly ready to go drive a truck then, and that's when I went through a roller coaster of thoughts. I was just tossed here and there. All the things that we have talked about thus far, the knowledge, the truths, in addition, the experiences, the promises that Yahweh's given me, just came crashing down and crushed me. And I was talking to a gentleman, one of the bride brothers, and he said, well, we have Passover coming up. And I thought, you know, that doesn't mean anything. But it came to me that in this covenant with the many, and now we'll introduce it, in this covenant with the many, which is Daniel chapter 9, it is the 70th period of 7 years that is mentioned there. In it, Yeshua came in the middle of that seven. He walked out 3.5 years. He was baptized at atonement, and he was crucified on Passover, and he walked out the latter 3.5 years of that covenant with the many in Daniel chapter 9. And it dawned on me, well, now hold on. Yahweh is very legal. And it indeed makes sense that if Yeshua's ministry began at atonement and went to Passover, it's obvious that the other 3.5 years, the preceding 3.5 years of that covenant with the many that have not been walked out yet, would equally be based on feasts. Now, Paul tells us in Thessalonians that the ascension, the first resurrection, will take place at trumpets, with a trumpet. And with trumpets, that's going to put the beginning of that 3.5 years at a Passover. And it was obvious, wow, did not consider this. Legally, Yahweh could not began the ministry period of the Elijah, the covenant with the many, until Passover.
Yeah, and what was really fascinating to me, and I think the listener will see this once they read the writing, is that it took the bride to intercede to walk out 3 Pentecosts. Once that was walked out, then the knowledge of this came.
Yes.
Of a possible Passover latter rain outpouring.
Now, we already mentioned one point, and that is that the covenant with the many could not begin until Passover in order to take us to a trumpets 3.5 years later. So with that 3.5 years, it could not begin at just any random time. It had to begin at a Passover or thereabouts, and we're going to talk about that further as well. So we have one point. It has to start at a Passover if it's going to end at a trumpets.
That's right.
Now, the other thing that came to me, and I went home, because I was out whenever I considered that, And I looked up when Passover was supposed to be in 2009, and that was on April 25, which at that time was 2 weeks away. And I asked the question, I wonder how many days there is between that. The number of days between April 3 and April 25 is 21 days. And I thought, 21 days, that sounds familiar. That's the book of Daniel. I remember he waited 21 days to get his prayer answered. And so I went and looked at that, and not only, of course, is it in Daniel, but remarkably, it's in chapter 10, immediately after the covenant with the many. So you had the covenant with the many, and that's in chapter 9. Chapter 10, verse 2, tells you that there was a delay of 3/7. And so now we had a second testimony that not only is there the covenant with the many, and this testimony of 3.5 years and it having to start at Passover, but right on the heels of that, you have the testimony that there is going to be a 21-day delay. And I thought, wow.
You know, what are the odds, Gary, of Yahweh taking us from trumpets back in October through three Pentecosts to April 3rd, and now exactly 21 days to Passover with scriptural confirmation, with scriptural legal governmental confirmation? What are the odds?
And, that's, you know, at this point as we look at it, it's very hopeful. Because what you had is you had a feast that started this whole thing, which would have been the Great Eighth Day. It's when the counts started. Great Eighth Day would have ended Tabernacles. Then you had to go through 3 49s. You couldn't overlap. We'll talk about that. You could not overlap. You went through 3 49s. Then you had to have a feast, which would have been Tabernacles Pentecost. After that feast, then there had to be another delay period, this time 3/7, which is the same as 3 49s, because 49 is 7 squared. So 3 49s and 3/7 are legally the same thing. So it's a shorter version, which took us 21 days, and then you had to have a feast, which would be Passover. Now, the count at the beginning of feast, 3 49s feast, we control that. But Passover was already set up. It was already established. You don't assign a date to Passover based on your number system. So it's incredible that the 3/7 fit right in there. In the writing, we talked about you could not stack any of those 21 days on the feast. If you had, you nullify it. And we've addressed this in other writings before. Is that whenever you have a count of 49 days, and then the 50th would be either a Pentecost or a Jubilee, by stacking the first of the next sequence of days on the 50th, you nullify it. Therefore, it was critical that there be a gap. When you're talking about 21 days, it was critical that there be a gap of 21 days, that it was freestanding without overlapping on either feast, or there would be a nullification. It is incredible. Very hopeful.
Right. You also mentioned in the writing there was the 21 days were a legal repeat of the 147 days to Tabernacles Pentecost that we passed through. Isn't that 147? Isn't that an interesting number? Didn't you write about that in the Waltz of Life? The 147?
Oh.
Mr. Meyer.
All right, folks. Mr. Meyer just knocked one out of the park. I didn't think of that. But see, I don't look for these things all the time. You're exactly right, Mr. Meyer.
There were 21 days were the legal repeat of the 147 days to Tabernacles Pentecost that we just passed through.
Incredible.
147 is the Waltz of Life.
All right. Now, Chris, if we don't get something on Passover, if I had false teeth, they'd fall out. The evidence here it goes beyond the realm of possibility.
The only piece I didn't quite understand is you talk about the three 49-day counts to Pentecost, they were indeed delays, and you link them back to the great eighth day of Tabernacles, which is November 6th, which is the promise that out of our innermost being would flow rivers of living water. How is that significant, that it's linked back to the great eighth day, and how do you link that back? Why is it linked?
It's a good question. These 49 counts, what they are is delay periods. When he puts 49s in there, or sevens, what he's doing is saying, I'm going to do something. But then he doesn't do it at that time. He delays, and he waits. And now, isn't that what he was going to do with Christianity, with the church?
Yes.
He came, and he was going to wait and delay. And they are three sevens. Each thousand year is the mark of the beast on it, so they were three sevens as well. But he can't wait for them. If he did, if he carried out the three sevens, the 21 for them, it would be, my God, why have you forsaken us? He's going to have to cut it short. But anytime he does a 49, it is a delay of a promise. Or whenever he starts sequencing sevens, it's the delay of a promise. When Yeshua came to this earth to set up the kingdom, he gave the church 3,000 years, which is three sevens, governmentally. And it's a delay of the promise.
So indeed, what you're saying then is all these feast days that we walked out, trumpets, recognizing the great eighth day of Tabernacles, walking out three Tabernacles, Pentecost, all these things were essential. The promise was essentially fulfilled, but the manifestation of it has not come yet. Would you say that would be true?
The promise is secured, is the word I think would be better. The promise is secured, but it is not evidenced. It's like the angel told Daniel. He said, soon as you prayed this, it was heard.
Uh-huh.
But he could not come because they were battling with this king of Persia. And so after 21 days, the angel was able to come, and he did what he would have done the next day, or even that very day. So these delays simply are a promise that which is to come, and you have an accumulative effect, because you have the eighth day, which is out of your innermost being will flow rivers of living water. And then you get the Tabernacles Pentecost, and you have this promise of the signet ring, which is the Pentecost, the latter rain, the Gihon, and the serpent turning back into a rod. And you secure these things, but you cannot cash in on them yet, because legally it cannot take place until Passover, or maybe even the days before it.
Now, you're right. Now, you also equated this, an example you gave was the sons of Israel when they entered into the promised land west of Jordan. It was on the 10th of the month. Can you talk about that a little bit?
Yes, let's do that.
Okay.
To bring everybody to the same point, what we've said thus far is that Passover would be the fulfillment, which is April 25, it should be the fulfillment based on everything we've experienced going back 6 months. Now, what about the days preceding? Well, there are several things to consider here, Chris. Yeshua began his ministry at Atonement, not at Tabernacles. He began his ministry at Atonement, which is the 10th day of the month. Now, which would be, of course, 4 days before.
Now, was it the 10th of the first month, right?
It depends on which calendar you're looking at. If you're looking at the old calendar, where Passover is the first of the month, then that would have been the 10th day of the seventh month. With the new millennial calendar, we flip. I'm glad you brought this up. In the new millennial calendar, we flip. This is whenever people start saying, the gospel is simple. But if you got a simple gospel, you're not going to understand government. Government is not simple. If you don't believe it, go get a doctorate, go get a jurisprudence degree. What happens is, I didn't mean that harshly. Government is not simple. What happens is, he has to flip those periods Because he flipped them already. Tabernacles used to be the first of the year, and then Passover became the first of the year. They have to be flipped back, where now Tabernacles is back the first of the year, and Passover would be the middle of the year. So, that's why I kind of avoided that, actually, because he was crucified on the 10th day of that month. At that time would have been the 7th month. But during our time now, that would be the 1st month.
And we've seen that Yahweh tends to flip things, correct?
Absolutely. Okay. He does it over and over. You go ask Ephraim and Manasseh. That's a testimony that he flipped in order to make them clean. They were unclean. They were half Israelite and half Egyptian. That's unclean. He never allowed mixes like that to be a part of his works. He rejected Ishmael. He rejected Judah's sons. He rejected Abraham's other offspring. So he had to flip them to make them clean. Now, Yeshua began his ministry, the covenant with the many, on the 10th, before Tabernacles. He did so on atonement. That's when he was baptized. That day is significant in other regards as well. If you go to Passover on the same day, the 10th day of that month, is when they would select the lamb, the Passover lamb. It is also assumed that that is the very day that Yeshua came into Jerusalem on the donkey and was heralded as king. He, in a sense, presented himself as the lamb to be slain on the 10th. So he had his triumphal entry. We know that the selection of the lamb is on the 10th day. We know that atonement and jubilee is on the 10th day. Yeshua was baptized on the 10th day. We also read in Ezekiel chapter 40, verse 1, that Ezekiel's vision concerning the building of the Ezekiel temple occurred on the 10th day of the month. The 10th day of the, it said at the first of the year, so it was the first month. So, even Ezekiel's vision concerning the temple was on the 10th day as well.
So is your hope then that based on the example of the sons of Israel when they entered into the promised land after they crossed the Jordan, that they were circumcised on the 10th of the first month, is it your hope that something will happen, that a circumcision will take place on the 10th day?
Well, we don't know that they were circumcised on the 10th day, and I'm glad you brought that one up because I was remiss in adding that one. They entered into the promised land west of the Jordan on the 10th day.
Okay.
Just before Passover. They entered in, and then they were instructed to circumcise. So whether they started circumcising that very day that they crossed or they circumcised the next day, I'm not certain.
All right, but they had basically 4 days from the 10th of the to the 14th, which was Passover, to circumcise themselves.
Yes, and keep in mind, Chris, from a negative standpoint, the abomination of desolation occurred 4 days before Passover Pentecost when the apostles cast lots for Matthias. That too was 4 days before. That wasn't the 10th day of the month, but Pentecost is never a date. It's a day because it varies in its date. And that too was 4 days before. So this 4 days before seems to be quite significant. Now, the question comes then, does the office of Yeshua, which is what Elijah is, Elijah occupies the office of Yeshua. That is where the serpent turns back into the rod, where Elijah then walks out a 3.5-year ministry period to prepare the way for Emmanuel. Does that begin on Passover, or would it begin beforehand on the 10th day? The indications are it should happen actually before Passover. If Yeshua made his triumphal entry on that day, it would seem that actually his ministry would, the ministry of Yeshua, which is the ministry of Elijah, would occur 4 days before, which would be April 21. Now, here is where the rubber meets the road. We've talked about knowledge. We've talked about the amazing aspects of this whole sequence and how incredible it is all laid out. And the hope that we have. And now we're getting to that date. I will be honest with you. If we get up to April 21, if April 21 and those days before Passover, nothing happens, I will probably, I will begin to question it. And I'm a very honest person. I'm not trying to build a kingdom for myself. It's important that these things start happening. And so the April 21, 22, 23, 24 that leads up to the 25th is very significant.
Well, he's given you the strength, you know, to endure, and he's given you insight and affirmation. You wrote about that at every junction. You know, you talked about each. We get to each stop. You continued the journey, and you've written, could you be wrong and this fail? Yes, there's always that possibility. But again, I keep seeing the same pattern each time that you continue on. And you talked about Daniel was told to be strong and courageous. Every time that you've continued, you've made a decision to continue on, the puzzle parts continue to fit together. And now, without continuing on to a third Tabernacles Pentecost, Gary, you would have never seen the Passover.
No, and that's the thing, and we talked about this in the previous broadcast, it's getting that ticket. You get a ticket, and the ticket takes you to a certain place. You think that's the destination. It's not. You're given another ticket to another destination. You think that's it. It's not. You get a ticket to another destination. Here we are now with our fourth ticket, if you would, to yet another destination, which is right around the corner at this point.
Right. The flip side, though, and I'm going to ask the hard question because you've asked me to and you like the hard question, is that we are approaching a period where the window legally, governmentally, will be closed. Is that not correct?
In our understanding, but let's first say we are approaching a time in which legally, governmentally, it seems the window is open.
Correct.
That window of opportunity is open. When we get on the other side, that is a very, in my mind, that is a very, very big slam. It's slamming. It'll be disappointing because, again, Chris, this goes all the way back to Trumpets October 16, and we're talking about the Jubilee that goes back to Nehemiah's wall as well. This is still all tied together.
Right, that's my point. I guess what I'm suggesting is that based on that window of Nehemiah, at some point as we get into the future, you're beyond that. You're on the other side of that.
You're on the other side of it, I would assume, on the other side of Passover. Now, someone could argue, and again, you know, I'm honest with everything I see. Someone could argue, well, there's always a count to Pentecost. But with the first remnant receiving the former rain with the Pentecost, we have had to tie the latter rain to a Tabernacles Pentecost, not a Passover Pentecost. I would not have confidence to go after a Pentecost after Passover. And so I'm a bit dubious about that. And honestly, you know, of course, if nothing happens after Passover, and I would wait the entire period of Passover, if nothing happens through Passover and the days leading up to it, then I will then be faced with going to drive a truck once again, and I'll be discouraged, and I'll know I've lost my family, and it'll be very hard. That's the reality of what I face. And so, you know, my daughter, my oldest daughter, criticized me, and she said, Father, if you're really hearing from God, you would be able to say, Thus saith the Lord. Well, Chris, I do not try to be something that I am not. I don't try to act like I'm something. And it's the knowledge and understanding that I take confidence in, and I have learned not to be bold and presumptuous. I've learned to be confident and to take hope in what I see, but assertive, bold, outspoken confidence, it doesn't accomplish.
Well, when you look at all the work that you've done on what Yahweh's shown you on, and what you've recorded on your website and through the web blog, you have, in a sense, said, "Thus saith the Lord." You've just presented it in a different way.
Well, I intentionally avoid saying, "Thus saith Yahweh." I say, "This is what I'm seeing. This is what should take place," which they confused with me saying that I'm prophesying. No, I'm saying this is what is testified and this is what should take place. I'm not so presumptuous as to say Yahweh is saying this.
Right, I've never heard you say that. And what's also interesting is that when I ask the question about, okay, what about this window that may be closing, your response was, we're going to look at the window that's open right now and walk through it. And that's the faith and the strength that you have to walk this out, to continue to walk this out and endure. We have a great opportunity before us. There is hope, and we're going to walk it out. We'll worry about the other side if we get there.
Indeed. And we're going to gather together here in my home in Salem, Missouri, on where people most people will start arriving on the 24th, and we're going to gather on a Saturday, Sunday, the 25th, 26th, and people are driving and flying in, and we're going to look to Yahweh, but hopefully something will have happened already. I really hope so. One of the things I wish would happen, I can't say that it's going to, but when they crossed, and we're going to talk about something else here in a minute, when they crossed into the Promised Land west of the Jordan, Yahweh told them to place 12 stones in the camp west of the Jordan, which is what Joshua did. Very interestingly, Joshua did something else that he was not instructed to do, but he did it. And that is, he placed 12 stones in the Jordan River. In the riverbed, of course, the water had piled up at Adam, which is quite interesting. The water of the Jordan River had piled up at Adam, and Joshua placed 12 stones in the camp where they were going to cross in to the Promised Land west of the Jordan, and Joshua placed 12 stones in the Jordan so that when the Jordan began to flow again, of course, they were covered. Those 12 stones in the Jordan looked to the 12 apostles, who were obviously baptized in those very waters by John the Baptist and whoever, that they would have been baptized in the very water in which those 12 stones were covered. That represented the first remnant 12 apostles that Yeshua selected. The 12 stones up in the camp represent the second remnant 12 apostles. I tell you, if we're going to dream and take hope, I wish that Yahweh would sovereignly give me the names of the 12 apostles before, say around the 10th, the 21st. I wish he would. If they established those 12 stones in the camp, I wish he would speak to me and show me. Now, why would I say speak to me and show me? Because I've experienced this before. For 2 years, back in the 70s, I searched the scriptures diligently, trying to understand the 12 areas of the soul. I knew there had to be 12 areas of the soul. That was based on three baptisms: the baptism under the cloud when they came out of Egypt, the baptism in the Sea of Reeds, the Red Sea, and then the baptism in the Jordan. That's your spirit, your body, and your soul. And the scripture says that we may be perfect and complete, lacking in nothing, spirit, soul, and body, or whatever order it is. So there are three baptisms, and I knew that the baptism under the cloud coming out of Egypt was the baptism of one's spirit, the baptism in the Sea of Reeds was the baptism of one's body, and the baptism in the Jordan was the baptism of the soul. There were 12 stones. I knew there had to be 12 areas of the soul. For 2 years, I studied to try to figure out what those 12 areas were, and I never could. One day, I was sitting at my desk at the house, and I said, "Holy Spirit, the scripture says that my spirit knows my innermost being." I said, "Would you send my spirit into my soul and have it to come back to me and report what the 12 areas of the soul are?" And Chris, immediately, words became very real to me. I mean, I understood these words, and I started writing them down. I wrote down the first one, and then another one came to me, and I wrote it down, and I realized that they were beginning to form three different groups. The soul is the mind, will, and emotions. And I knew that these three were beginning to lay out in this pattern of mind, will, and emotions. And I would, oh, okay, that's a mind. Okay, and then he'd give me another one, that's will, and my spirit would give me another one, that's emotions. And they weren't in any, they were not just a 1, 2, 3, 1, 2, 3, 1, 2, 3, 1, 2, 3. But they fell in these three categories. 11 of them were given to me by my spirit. And then the 12th one, Yahweh would not allow my spirit to deliver it. And the 12th one, he spoke to me himself, not audibly, but it was distinctly different from the other 11. He spoke to me. I knew it was the voice of Yahweh. I've learned to hear his voice. And he told me the 12th area of the soul, which is attitude. And I believe the reason this is because it's extremely important. It's like the 12th apostle. The 12th apostle is the most important apostle. He's extremely important. And the soul is the same thing. I mean, the attitude is the same thing. Now, here's my hope. If he told me what the 12 areas of my soul were, then I hope he tells me who the 12 apostles are, the latter rain 12 apostles. Now, I can't manufacture that. I can't force him to do it. I just wish he would. The timing would be right. If he doesn't tell me then, I trust he's going to tell me at some point.
Now, the 12 that you had established back at Montauk in New York.
That wasn't in Montauk. That was here at my house. That was at the first ever trumpets that we had.
All right. So was that an intercession?
Yes. Everything from 1994 to when the Tabernacles Pentecost failed in January of 2008, I drove away from that 2008 gathering with one conclusion. That is that everything in my life up to that point had been an intercession.
It's time for some fulfillment, isn't it, Mr. Naylor?
Indeed, indeed. Now, this brings up a good point. Again, we're going to talk about some government. For someone who's not versed in bride truth, this is going to get deep. If it's not already. It is quite interesting that if you count the years from Adam, Abraham was born 1,948 years after Adam. So let's just call that 1948 from Adam. Okay? Abraham was born in 1948 from Adam. Abraham went to Canaan, which is the promised land, Canaan. He went to Canaan in 2003 from Adam. It's interesting that if you take the birth of Abraham in 1948, if we assume that Abraham was born at Tabernacles, which is a just consideration, we don't know exactly when, but it's a just consideration, and you'll see why. If you go 1,974 years and 6 months, you come to when John the Baptist began his ministry, which was Passover 29 A.D.
Now, why is 1,974 years significant?
Well, we'll see.
Okay.
It is what is considered really the pre-church period. It's basically the period of the sons of Israel. So you got 1,974 years and 6 months of the period of the sons of Israel. John the Baptist was born, and at that point, you can say it was the church period, because he was the one who had the spirit of Elijah, began to prepare the way for Yeshua. Okay, because he was not Elijah, but he had the spirit of Elijah. He did prepare the way for Yeshua, his coming. Now, and including baptizing. If you go 1,974 years and 6 months from John the Baptist beginning his ministry, you come to Tabernacles 2003. Now, we just noted that Abraham was born in 1948, and he entered into Canaan in 2003. We already have a testimony in his own life of these same two-year periods, 1948 to 2003. And when we go 1,974 years and 6 months to John, and then go another 1,974 years and 6 months, it takes you to 2003 at Tabernacles. Okay, when that took place, we already knew that in advance. We were talking about it, and we were saying that that is when the Test of Carmel would end, and Christianity had their chance to bring forth the fruits of the kingdom and failed. In 2004, we gathered together and had Passover, and after that, the revelation of truth just quadrupled. It was incredible. There was just writing after writing after writing, starting with the rod. And we realized that we had entered into the promised land at that point. And I've written that. We entered into the promised land in 2000. You could either say whenever they lost it at Tabernacles, or we entered in at Passover in 2004. We entered into the promised land. I have written that that is when the millennial reign began. Now, if that's the case, then what are we experiencing now? If I had written before that that is when we entered into the millennial reign, and we had entered into the promised land in 2004, how can I say that we are going to cross the Jordan at Passover, or of course the 4 days before Passover, we would enter into the promised land west of the Jordan? Now, I want to ask you a question, and this is going to be a difficult question. When did the sons of Israel enter into the promised land?
On the 10th day.
See, that's the difficulty of this question. Because the reality is, they entered into the promised land when they got to that land that Reuben, Gad, and half Manasseh would occupy. That was promised land for them. The 2.5 tribes of Reuben, Gad, and half of Manasseh were on the east side of the Jordan. The promised land was not just the land west of the Jordan. So they actually entered into the promised land before they ever crossed the Jordan. Does that make sense?
Okay, it does. And I remember you have a video
yes.
On that, the 24 elders.
Yes, indeed. Mm-hmm. And so, after they had been on the land east of the Jordan for some period of days, then of course they crossed the Jordan, and whenever they did, Yahweh said, make sure that the people stay back 2,000 cubits from the Ark of the Covenant. Don't let them come closer than 2,000 cubits. So they stayed back 2,000 cubits. They went up to the Jordan. Ark of the Covenant, the priests put their feet in. The water stopped. It piled up at Adam. They put the stones up on the other bank, on the west bank, and then they put the stones in the Jordan, and then the people went across. And that occurred on the 10th day, as you said. But the reality is, Chris, that they entered into the promised land before they ever crossed the Jordan. Wouldn't that be correct?
Yes, it appears so.
Yes. But there's a testimony of 2,000, if we would say 2,000 years, having to do with crossing through the Jordan into the land west of the Jordan. Okay, here's what I think took place, which seems to be evidenced. In 2004, that experience was that we entered into the promised land, but that was the land east of the Jordan. I trust that what's going to take place in the days before us as we approach Passover is that we are going to enter into the millennial reign, the period west of the Jordan, which will mean the 2,000 years are finished. And we entered into that millennial period. That's the difficulty when Yahweh does something. There sometimes are several dates you can go by, or several reference points. And this is one of those cases. But it makes sense whenever you look at what the promised land really was.
Right, and you've talked about circumcision. We talked about that they We're not sure if they circumcised themselves on the 10th day, but sometime between the 10th and the 14th before Passover. What is the spiritual implication of that? You've talked about that Yahweh takes responsibility.
Yes, and of course that is exactly what has to happen for us to bring forth Emmanuel, for us to have the power to overcome the nations, for us to expose the multitude of sins and errors of this nation and of the church. We have to have power. Yahweh God has got to take full responsibility for us to establish the 12 apostles, to have power from on high, to be able to work signs and wonders, to have a signet ring that I can do the will of Yeshua, do the will of the Father with authority. The serpent turning back into a rod is all going to take power. Yahweh God has got to take full responsibility for what we're going to do, because see, in the wilderness period, the sons of Israel did not circumcise. It was a testimony that Yahweh was not taking full responsibility for the period of Christianity, and
yes.
He's not.
Yes.
It
yes.
is a corrupt work that cannot bring forth the fruits of the kingdom. So it was a period in which there was no circumcision. Yahweh didn't take responsibility, and what he has to do is he has to take full responsibility. It was testified as well concerning Joshua. You will recall that he was walking along, and there was a man. He said, "Are you for us or against us?" And the man said, "Neither. I'm the captain of Yahweh's host." And he said, "Take your sandals off." And so that's the same thing. It's taking your sandals off, letting Yahweh have full responsibility for what is going to take place. And of course, that's what was testified back in 1994 of May, whenever I wrote a letter to the supporters of the Sunshine House Ministries. I said, it's by God or not at all. And that's what we face. And that's the very difficult thing coming up to these Passover events this next week. This by God or not at all is very risky. But Chris, we are going into it with the greatest of hope based on what we see. We have spent an hour talking about the government of this.
Right, and of course the knowledge that's been received, and I don't know how many times that you've talked about it's not just something that's made up. I mean, and again, we talk about, as you talk about these things, I see, yeah, these things, although they appear complicated, once you study these things and you kind of go over them in your head and you get in the flow of things, they really are quite simple to understand. It's not complicated at all.
Indeed. And what we're talking about, this unfolding that you just alluded to, which goes back to October 16, which would have been trumpets, or which was trumpets, how much more so is that true concerning the revelations in general, the new millennial calendar, the necessity of adding a Pentecost to tabernacles? It is a building process over these 14 years, now the 15th year, and of course it gives me hope. This is the 15th year. 15 years, Yahweh had me to not eat desserts, and I have fasted for 15 years. But keep in mind, what is 15 years? 15 years is a 7 and a 7, followed by 1. Again, it's 2 delay periods. It's a 7 and a 7, therefore the fulfillment would come in the 1.
Right.
This is the 15th year, and I hope we're going to see the fulfillment. There's a great amount of hope that we have here, and expectation. But Yahweh God alone is the one who can do it. And I will go back to the beginning of the broadcast. I hope we're in the place of like Yeshua. We know what's going to take place. He was from above. We're not. We're from below. Knowledge and understanding for us does not come easy. But it seems that through government and intercession, He has given us an understanding as we have walked all of these things out. As we have paid the price, He has given us an understanding concerning these things, and we walk in them, and that's why on April 25 we're going to gather, and hopefully Yahweh will already begun doing some works, but that is our hope.
Well, I am just amazed at looking back at since October to see all the things that have been unfolded, and of course the non-fulfillment of things, but then the very next thing, again, that next stop on the destination, and how Yahweh has continued to give you things to write. Go back and look at all the things that have been written since then. Wonderful, marvelous things. And I'm just amazed that it took going through a third Tabernacles Pentecost to see this Passover potential. And having not walked it out, I don't think you would have ever seen it.
No, and that is so true with all of these things. Unless I had walked them out, it wouldn't be possible. One other point that I have on my notes, it's amazing we talked about all this. I had all this on one little page of handwritten notes. But one brother brought up that the Jews' Passover, what they call their Seder Supper, is marked by the hoped visitation of Elijah at Passover. And it's so true. I mean, that goes back to the medieval days, whenever they started that. And that's the very thing that we hope for, where they testify Elijah joining them at Passover. And I trust that that is indeed going to be the case. But we don't have to be concerned about going to the door and say, is he here? He is already with us.
Amen. And you've also talked about how, and Scripture talks about how Elijah restores all things. And, you know, just the restoration of the calendar is an example, one example of something that obviously needed to be restored.
Yes, the restoration of the calendar, the understanding of it, flipping it, where Tabernacles is at the first of the year. We need the restoration of the 12 apostles. We need the restoration of the serpent turning back into a rod. We need the signet ring to go to the Mordecai, leave the hand of Haman. All of these things and much more need to be restored. We need the kingdom established on this earth that has been corrupted for 2,000 years.
Yes, and we need a preacher of righteousness, Gary, somebody like you, who only you, that will stand up against the corruption that's in our society. And I believe that people are hungry for change, that they're hungry for it. I mean, it's evidenced by President Obama ran on his platform on change, and people have said, yes, we want change. And I believe people are hungry for this, and they really want change. They want righteousness in their lives to some extent. And there are also those that don't. They just want to live their life the way they have been for the devil, and they need to be called out. And I do as well. I mean, I don't live a perfect life. I mean, we all have got to change.
We do, and I believe that there is nobody else, and I don't say this boastfully, that there is nobody else on this earth that I see that has the message of righteousness and the degree of truth that Yahweh has favored me with. I am very grateful for that. I don't see anybody else being able to come on the scene and do anything towards the purpose of restoring the kingdom. Number one, they do not have knowledge. They do not have understanding. And they're all compromisers. How many Christians out there would stand and say it is governmentally wrong for women to vote and to be in government? Women should not be wearing pants. They need to be wearing dresses. They need to quit wearing makeup. We've got to put away this porn that's in our entertainment and the music, the curse of 1920. There is nobody out there who can stand in that place and speak those things. Those are unique to what Yahweh has shown me.
Right, and men need to stand up and reestablish government in their home.
Yes, so I look at these things, Chris, and it's very discouraging to me because I just see so much error. And that's one of the reasons why when I get discouraged, I just say, well, I'll just go drive a truck. And the righteousness that I see and believe and the truth that I have will exist inside the cab of a truck. And I will have that in my little world. But, of course, there needs to be that preaching of righteousness to the world. And that is exactly what I hope takes place in these days before us.
Well, we do have, there is some hope. There's a huge window of opportunity that lies ahead of us, and I'm very excited and hopeful about what's the next few days that are ahead of us.
I am too, Chris, and we needed this opportunity to explain these things. The writing called Passover 2009 laid out the information in general We just needed so much more information added, and that's the purpose of our broadcast today. And I do hope that we get that which we see promised to us.
Well, I do too, and of course I'll be speaking with you in over the next week or so, and I will be joining you in at your home in Missouri, and I'm really anxious and excited to see what you're always going to do.
And the invitation for anybody who listens to this broadcast before April 25 is email me at gary@remnantbride.com. Email me and let me know you're coming. I'll be glad to answer any of your questions, and we look to Yahweh to fulfill His word.
Well, I'm excited, and I appreciate this time today, and look forward to our visit together soon. And keep the faith, keep enduring, stay strong. Forget about driving a truck for now, and we'll see what Yahweh's going to do.
It's easy to forget about driving the truck for now, with so much that Yahweh is showing us. And so,
of course,
it's with hope.
All right, my brother, it's good talking with you. Thank you so much for all that you do, and we look forward to the days ahead.
Amen. That we will do. So we will see what happens. Blessings to you, bro.
All right, take care.
Mm-hmm.
Bye.
Bye.